Hey there, this is Seth Wars from Channel 9 coming to you from deep in the bowels of Building 20. I'm here with your curmudgeon-in-chief.
That's very kind of you.
Barry Dorrance.
I think other people would object to in-chief, but I don't
know. Oh, there's other curmudgeon. Yeah, there's quite a contingency.
Yeah, there's the Windows security people. I think they're probably more important than I am.
You do security for ASP.NET.
And .NET Core.
Oh.
As well, because, you know, they don't have a security person anymore, so they borrowed me.
We're in a brand new world.
This is true. Yes, we're all one happy core framework.
So we're talking about auth, right? Usually auth is broken up into authentication and authorization. Am I missing anything?
No.
Okay. What's the difference between those two things?
Okay. So authentication is when you ask someone who they are.
Okay.
And you validate the username and password or the Facebook credentials or whatever the heck else. So basically that's the process of getting someone's identity.
I see.
And authorization is then deciding what that identity is able to do.
Okay. So are these two things orthogonal? Can you have a solution for one and a separate solution for the other?
Kind of. So you can authenticate, but you don't have to authorize. But you can't authorize without having some sort of authentication in front of it. So you are Seth and your identity is encapsulated in your Microsoft badge.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't actually get you much. I mean, you can sort of wander around campus and people will look at the badge and go, oh, that's Seth.
Uh-huh.
But the authorization part of it is making sure that you haven't been fired and that your badge is still active, which, you know, is a risk.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So today we're gonna dispense with the authentication.
Yes.
And we've left that to other videos. I think I did one with Pranav.
One with Pranav because you know, we've improved it a little bit, but we haven't changed it in a major way.
Okay.
So it's, you know, deeply unexciting to me. Whereas authorization and the new way of authorizing, because with ASP.NET Core, we've thrown so much away just to make people deeply unhappy.
Right.
They have to rewrite. Yeah, we do this to make you unhappy. But this was my baby.
Okay.
This was designed by me and then implemented by people who are much smarter than I.
So one of the problems with ASP.NET that I had is that we would decorate controller action methods with, like, you have to be this user or this group, and there was like these funny weird strings. And so I literally just ended up throwing it away and writing my own thing.
Okay. Yes. Lots of people rewrote their own authorize attribute.
Which is, you shouldn't do that. It's not a good idea.
Well, okay, in older versions of ASP.NET, it was the only way to make it bend to your will.
Right.
However, we saw some pretty poor implementations of the authorize attribute that had gaping holes or just didn't do what people were expecting it to do. So whilst the authorize attribute exists these days, it is a marker interface. There is no code behind it. So if you write your own and put code behind it, we're going to ignore it altogether.
So that's what's happening now?
Yes.
In the new version? Okay.
Yes. So in core, there is still an authorize attribute because that's what we use, mm-hmm. but you can't write your own.
Okay.
If you really do want to go down that route, then you look at authorization filters and stuff like that. But hopefully with the changes that we've made, you won't need to do that.
So let's talk a little bit about the changes that we've made to authorization. Maybe you can show us some stuff. Or is there, I heard you did a workshop. Is there a way someone can get started with this?
So I did a workshop and it's on my GitHub account.
Mm-hmm.
We really ought to move it over to a more official one at some point. However, at the minute it's on my GitHub account and that's on github.com/blowdart. And if you look underneath there, you will see right at the top, ASP.NET Authorization Workshop, which has a step-by-step guide that is so simple even Seth can follow it.
I almost followed it.
Yeah.
Not as...
Where there are a lot of big words. Is that
yeah, there was letters.
Authorization is a long
word. It's a hefty one.
Yeah.
So maybe you can walk...
It's spelled incorrectly
in this country. I know.
Someone
got me on that the other day with serialization with an S.
Yes.
So why don't you help me out and maybe help some other people out and walk us through some of the finer points of your...
Okay. Yeah, I think it's helping the other people because you're probably beyond all help.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so what we have in Shiny Visual Studio is a very basic application with MVC. So we have all our new pieces. We're adding MVC. We set up static routes. We've got a single home controller.
which just returns a view, and the view says, hello world. Okay. Yeah, so we run it, and hopefully, if I haven't messed things up. So, we have hello world, and this performs neither authentication nor authorization.
Yeah, because it's just...
It's just...
Here it is.
Plain and simple. So, if we look in our project.json, we can see that basically... There's, you know, we're depending on MVC, we're depending on Kestrel, which is our new web server, and we're depending on static files. We don't really need static files for this demo, but most people want it because they want to use CSS, so let's shove it in there anyway.
Sure, sure.
Okay, nice and simple. So the first thing that we do is we will manage NuGet packages, and this is where David Fowler just gives me grief because I use the UI. Mm-hmm. Rather than using the command line, because I am old.
I use the UI stuff too, so we might be the same as old.
Yeah. So I'm going to search for authentication because, well, here are all our authentication options. And honestly, we don't care because that's not what we're dealing with. Authorization.
So this is
spelled with a Z.
Yes, and this is a separate NuGet package then?
Everything is a separate NuGet package these days, and you can see that there are a bunch of ones. So what I'm going to do is I am going to cheat. I am going to copy and paste in the right pieces from the workshop because there are so many. Well, you can imagine it's the Microsoft one.
And that's interesting because every single piece of function, because when you start a new project in ASP.NET, it's literally the nothing project.
It depends how you do it. There is an empty project which finally, after so many years, is actually an empty project. We've been really bad at writing empty project templates. Mm-hmm. But now we're just going to, we actually have one. You have to add things bit by bit. So we're going to install authorization.
Okay.
And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to install the cookie middleware. Now, middleware is this magical piece of code that runs inside your ASP.NET pipeline that can do things before it reaches your code.
So essentially, the cookie middleware is like intercepting any cookies and doing whatever you need to do with cookies.
Yes.
And
so,
then passing it up to stack.
So the cookie middleware will basically allow you to put an identity in a cookie and then automatically read it back out again. So this is what we're going to do as we create identities.
Okay, so because we're going to be skipping the whole authentication.
Yeah, we're going to manually do it.
We're going to just put
in
it
code.
In, yeah, in code. And just say, this is who this person
is. Which
is,
yeah, we're going to hard code usernames and hard code roles and hard code claims, which is never what you want to do in the real world, but it makes for an incredibly easy demo.
Yeah, because again, we're only looking at the authorization piece.
Yeah. So everything is hopefully installed. And if I run it, well, nothing changes because we haven't hooked anything up.
Sure.
So we go to our startup class and we're going to go up to configure services and we'll flip back so we know exactly what we want to do. So when we add things and they are an ASP.NET service, we wire them up in configure services. Mm-hmm. And order is important. So I am now putting authorization before MVC.
Okay.
We don't want it after MVC because we want to access it in our controllers.
I see.
So the way that middleware works is it's basically just this great big collection of middleware, and we run them in the order in which you have configured them.
So you might actually, if you do something inadvertently, you might add something to the pipeline down the stack that's going to kill something that's a little up the stack.
Yep, or if you get them in the wrong order, then things just don't work as you expect. So when things go wrong, the first thing you want to look at is the order at which you have put things into the pipeline.
And if you haven't looked at Owen before, this was the inspiration of Owen, where literally you have a function that calls the next function, that calls the next function, that does all sorts of crazy
stuff. Middleware just sits there, it takes what has come from before, does some stuff to it, spits it off to the next one.
Okay.
Nice and simple.
All right.
Honestly, I promise.
And the reason why we have to do authorization first is because MVC depends on it.
When we add checks, MVC will eventually depend on it. You can have MVC without authentication and authorization, but
correct.
Once you want to use the authorization bits and pieces, then yes, you need to add it, and it needs to come before MVC.
Cool.
Okay, so we have add authorization in configure services, which will do nothing until we wire it up. Mm-hmm. So the way we wire it up is you talked about our authorize attribute. Mm-hmm. This still exists.
So it's the same thing as it used to be.
Yep. If I can spell.
Yeah, there you go.
And we need to bring in our namespace. Okay. And lo and behold, it goes. So this should be familiar to everyone. And what this will do is it will only allow authenticated users access to the home controller.
Okay.
So what do you think is going to happen when I run this?
It's probably going to return a 3.0 or 4.0. I don't know the codes by memory, but there's a...
That's shocking. You should learn them all off, especially the I'm a little teapot one.
There is a little I'm a little teapot?
There is a little... There's a little teapot. So if I run this now in Edge, I get a blank screen. Just like the look on your face right now. Okay? So I'm going to explain why. If I bring up developer tools, and I go to network, and I hit refresh, and there we go. I am getting a 401 unauthorized.
That's the one. Okay. 401.
So there are two main status codes for HTTP around this. There is 401, which is unauthorized, mm-hmm. and there is 403, which is forbidden. What's the difference?
That's a good question. So I'm guessing 401 is you're not authenticated.
Pretty much, yes.
403 is you are authenticated, but you do not have access.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Wow, I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah,
were you pre-reading yesterday?
I rubbed some brain cells together. It was a difficult task.
Okay, so we just have right now a raw 401. Now, if you're using the MVC templates, what would happen here is we would redirect you to a login page mm-hmm. because that's what we need to do to get your to get you to log in and to authenticate yourself. So we are going to add the bits and pieces for a login page.
Okay, cool.
All right. So this is all incredibly boring, and we're just not going to do this live. We are going to first of all set up the cookie bits and pieces, and like I say, it's all in the GitHub.
Now, for the configuration, the use, is the order important there as well?
Not particularly.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure it probably is, but we don't need to particularly worry. So I'm going to add cookie authentication. Like I say, what this does is it basically reads cookies, reads the identity from the cookie, and recreates it. So then when you go request.user, mm-hmm. you get the user that has come from the cookie. And as you can see, we have a login path, which is our unauthorized, which is what, 401 or 403?
Unauthorized is 401.
Yep. And then access denied.
403.
403. Okay. And there are a couple of other options here. Automatic authentication means this is going to run with every single request and look for a cookie and then bring the identity in if it's there. An automatic challenge is what will take the raw 401s and the 403s and turn them into redirects to the paths that we have up here.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. So this is part of the pipeline as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This sits in the pipeline. This wires up cookie authentication middleware.
Got it.
Okay. So what we will now do is we will create an account controller. I'm just going to cut and paste from here because nobody wants to see me mistype everything. All right, so we have our unauthorized mm-hmm. and our authorized action and our forbidden action.
And these, to clarify, are the routes that you specified when you get a 401 or a 403. Go to this.
Yeah. Got it. Well, they're routes.
Oops. Routes.
Yes. Yes. I need to add... how to properly speak English into your schedule.
Yeah, I do see here authorization lab. Is there, what's going on here, so Barry? Where's the purity? Okay.
So I have tried long ago, especially when I was doing documentation. I would spell it in the English way, and then people who were checking would log a bug saying you've spelled authorization incorrectly, and I would look at it and I would close the bug as cannot reproduce. But apparently that's not as funny as I think it is.
I think it's hilarious.
And so I have to go and spell things in American English.
Simplified. There's traditional English. And simplified. They're two different things.
Yes. There's correct.
That's right.
Correct and American. You're going to get emails. I don't care.
I love emails.
So, and inside our account controller, we are going to add some
two views, right?
We're going to add two views. Yep. So we're going to add our unauthorized. And look, I spelled it correctly.
Yeah. You see,
Just to appeal to my fellow countrymen.
And just as you're putting these in, I like that we're starting from nothing and then putting these things in. Because what happened is some of the earlier templates that we've done, and feel free to keep doing this, is like we would start this thing up and there'd be so much code in there, I didn't know where to even start thinking about
that,
stuff.
That has been a long-standing problem.
But this is now, good.
A lot of the time, you know, if you're going to set up an MVC project, you want to use our identity stuff, which is what Pranav has been talking to you about, because we do a lot of the hard work for you. But this, for demonstration purposes, helps explain what's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
So if I hit run now, hopefully...
Unauthorized.
So that's where we expect it to be. Mm-hmm. So you have not logged in.
Right.
You have gotten a 401, and the cookie middleware sits there and it goes, oh, hey, I've gotten a 401 from the authorization pieces, and I know about that, so I know that I'm in a browser, so I will redirect that to your unauthorized page.
Okay. So now we need to do, traditionally you do some sort of mechanism to get identity, but we're just going to cheat and just type in an identity.
We are, but first of all, I'm going to show you something else that will confuse and delight.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. So this becomes a little bit painful trying to remember to put authorize absolutely everywhere.
Right.
Because normally when you are authenticating and authorizing, you basically want most of your app to demand authentication and then perform authorization on it. And you don't want to put the authorize attribute on every single controller.
No, I mean, with the exception of like very, very few for very specific reasons.
Yeah, like a help page or a contact us, or a here is Seth's holiday pics, because you want as many people to see you in your Magnum style briefs as possible.
I have several pairs.
Yes, it was the Magnum style mustache that impressed me the most.
Thank you.
Okay.
It took me all of one day to grow. Pretty manly.
Okay, fair enough. So I'm going to delete authorize, and if we run it again, there would be no redirection.
Right.
So that's basically not what we want. So I'm going to skip back to my bits and pieces of code. And what I am going to do here is I'm basically going to cheat. I'm going to go back to configure services, which is in my startup.cs class. And in my add MVC, I'm going to change it. Ta-da! I am specifying configuration. And as part of the configuration, I am going to set a default authorization policy. And we will come on to what policies are in a little bit. But they're basically the way of saying what an identity must fulfill in order to grant it access. So our default policy will be, I must require an authenticated user.
I see. And so eventually down the road, because this policy thing seems kind of new to me in the next version, we're going to talk about more policies a little bit later on.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to dazzle and impress.
Okay.
So if I kind of do this now and run it, then things are going to go horribly wrong.
Is there going to be explosions?
This is deliberately horribly wrong, unlike the previous horribly wrong when I made a spelling mistake. Okay. So, yeah, as you can see, what tends to have happened here is we have ended up in an infinite loop. Because when you try and access a website that requires authentication and authorization, if you're not authorized, it sends you to the login screen.
Which again is
not
authorized.
Which requires authentication and authorization. So it tries to redirect you back again. Excuse me.
It's literally.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Okay, so where were we?
So it's literally like me trying to click away that pop-up ad that keeps on coming up. The authorization is clicking back on itself all the time.
Indeed. Where have you been browsing that you get?
Let's move on.
Okay. So it's stuck in an infinite loop, which is not particularly helpful. So there is a way around this. What we do is we go to our account controller, which is where we have our unauthorized and our forbidden, and we go allow anonymous.
Okay.
And that allows anonymous users.
You could have named that a little bit more descriptively, don't you think? Allow anyone. Allow anyone.
Yeah. Allow the hoi polloi to come in.
Allow the peeps.
Yep. So now we're hitting the right.
Got it.
Okay. So we have a website that requires authentication because we have set up authorization rules to say, I require a user identity.
And that's very subtle, right? Because at the beginning we said authentication, authorization are different things, but authorization has a dependency on authentication.
Yes.
And what you're saying is we're gonna create the first policy that we're gonna create is we're gonna say no one gets in to anything.
Correct.
Unless you specifically say allow the peeps.
Exactly.
Which is my API review suggestion.
Allow the peeps.
Yeah.
Really? Yes. Well, if you want to suggest that, I will treat it with the reaction that it deserves.
Okay.
Delete.
No.
Okay, so what we want to do now is we want to get to the point where we are going to basically cheat. Instead of having a username and password form and a database behind it, and we have to deal with storing passwords and salting and hashing them because we never store password in plain text, Seth?
No, we don't. I salt all of my hashes.
Okay.
Wait, that came out wrong.
So we are going to cheat. And what we are going to do is we are going to manually create an identity. As soon as the unauthorized page is hit, we're just going to create an identity and cheat.
Got it.
So I will skip back to my lovely, lovely lab. And I am going to replace unauthorized with code that cheats.
So essentially what we're doing is we're pretending that we're going through the whole process of getting
authentication. Yes, at this point we would have gone to a database. We would have validated that the user is in fact correct and that the password is correct. And then eventually we would have used the cookie authentication to sign in. So here what we are doing is we are going to create an identity. And in core, everything now is a claims identity.
Which is different, right? Because before
It was a plain principle and identity, and you could make your own. You could make your own by implementing iPrinciple and iIdentity.
Which is what I did, which was the wrong thing to do.
It has, some people have very good reasons for doing it, but now if you've made an investment in custom principles and identities, that's gone away.
And primarily because with this new claims-based authentication / authorization, you can pretty much add whatever you want to that now.
And it's the way the internet works. So if, for example, you have written an application that allows Facebook logins, you bounce off to the Facebook login, Facebook returns a token to you that has a bunch of claims in it. The user's first name, the user's last name, the user's Facebook URL, or...
And the sub.
The sub.
Which is their ID.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a different ID for Google, and it's a different ID for Twitter, and it all becomes a little bit of a mess. But everything is now claims, and a claim has a name, and a claim has a value.
And it's sort of like you have your user that comes back, and inside of this claims principle, you're also going to have a series of claims, like a list of claims.
A claims principle may contain one or more claims identities. This is where it gets a little bit strange.
So you can have multiple identities.
You can. So if you think about it, if you have written a website where you have your own backend database and you have Facebook login as well. So what happens is you link someone's Facebook identity to your own backend identity. So that's two different identities for the same person, the same principle.
I see.
So you could represent that as a single claims principle with multiple claims identities.
Interesting. And that's see, because usually I would, for example, if someone logs, they have a Facebook and you have a Twitter login.
Yep.
There always comes a time where you forget that you use Twitter the first time and use Facebook the next time.
Yep.
And then when you merge those together in the background, you really don't have to do anything other than say these two identities form part of the
same person.
Okay.
So if you look at another way in a physical world environment, your driver's license is one identity. Your Microsoft badge is another identity, but they still represent the same principle.
Got it.
Seth.
Got it. Cool.
Okay. So what we're going to do here is we are going to create a list of claims, and I'm basically going to make a very basic claim, which is my name, and then I'm going to create an identity out of it. And when you are creating your own identities, you must specify a login method. Otherwise, when you look at identity and look at the is authorized property on it, it comes up as false. So, if you're doing this manually and you're creating your claims identity, always, always specify a login type. Otherwise, you will be an unauthorized user.
And what's the reason for that? What's that string do?
I have no idea. Well, in theory, you could have unauthenticated users, which are still a principle. So you could construct an identity out of someone without going through authentication. So you could identify a user by their IP address.
I see.
So that would be an unauthenticated user unless you're performing authentication based on IP address.
And that's kind of a smart thing to do sometimes, because say they're shopping on your website and they're not authenticated, you still want to carry that identity and that principle around and add claims.
So you make up a GUID as someone's ID, so it's an unauthenticated identity, and you can then match up your shopping cart to that.
Cool.
So we have our user identity, and then we're going to create a principle out of it, and we're putting the claims identity into there. So we have our user principle, but that only hangs around for
that request.
That request. So what we need to do is we need to call httpContext.authentication.signin async.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that I have now changed our function to be async, because everything is async now.
It's the way to do things.
Yes.
All the cool async kids do it.
And you know, in proper examples, you're going off to look in databases.
Sure.
So you would do that in the background and everything would all fall together. So I'm going to call signin async with the name of the cookie middleware that we set up in startup. We get on here, look, authentication scheme.
I got it.
So these are how these two things.
And if those names don't match, there's going to be problems, right?
Yes, if these names don't match, you will at best get exceptions. At worst, you will just not get anyone logged in and you'll be puzzling about it. So when you do this and you want to change from the default, there are a bunch of defaults for cookie authentication and everything else, then please set up a constant classic constants.cs class and then have const string my middleware name equals, and then refer to that rather than cutting and pasting strings everywhere.
And it seems like there's two strings that we have to worry about. There's the authentication scheme, and then there's also the authentication method.
Well, that doesn't particularly matter. We don't care about that once we've created the identity.
Okay.
So I'm basically going to call sign in. I'm going to point it to the cookie middleware. I'm going to give it the principle I want to sign in as, and I'm going to set some expiration dates. So the cookie's going to last for 20 minutes or until I close the browser, but these things are kind of, you know, they compete with each other. And we're not going to allow refresh because that's really there for ASP.NET identity. And then when we log in, when we hit a login screen, what happens is the original URL comes as a query string parameter. So we want to redirect back to it. And we have this wonderful method called redirect to local, which I'm going to cut and paste in. Here we go. And what this will do is it will check whether the URL that you are giving it is local to your application.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, it'll use it. If it isn't, it'll just go to the home page. And the reason you do that is because otherwise you have an open redirect vulnerability. And someone could just hit your login page and redirect off to the sorts of sites that give you loads of pop-ups and drop malware.
So in essence, they're hijacking that cookie.
They're hijacking your session, because cookies always belong to the site that issued them.
Okay.
But if people created a link like that, the link would look like it's coming from your website, and then it redirects off to malware, and you know, Google and Bing kind of flag that sort of thing when eventually it happens, and you'll drop down the ratings, and it'll just make you look bad.
Okay. So you always want to check when you're redirecting, am I redirecting to something on my site?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. When you're redirecting manually, which is what we're doing here, because we're taking it from a query string parameter. Normal redirections that go to actions and controllers are always going to be internal, so you don't need to worry. So it's just in this case. So if we run this and I have spelt everything correctly, which apparently seems to be a problem,
we now won't even see that page at all. It'll just be redirected.
That's correct. The view has gone away. So hopefully we get to Hello World,
which is where we are an authenticated user.
Correct.
Got it.
we're not proving we're an authenticated user yet. You'll just have to believe me.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to change that view. And we will stop all of this. And we'll skip back. And we're going to cut and paste some things. Now, this is deliberately complicated. So here we have our index view, which we've seen, you know, doesn't give us any useful information. It doesn't indicate whether you're logged in or not. So I am going to replace this with magic code. And this magic code is complicated on purpose. This is probably not how you would do things in the real world, but it harkens back to this whole idea of a principal may have multiple identities.
Okay.
So I'm going to bring in the claims namespace because we're always acting upon claims. And we have our user property, which is the user principal and any of the identities that middleware has created. And I'm going to look and make sure that I'm going to look in the identities collection, and I'm going to look for any identity that returns true for the isAuthenticated property. So if you go back to that bit where I was saying when you create an identity, you have to specify the login type, that's what gives you isAuthenticated is true or false. If you forget that, isAuthenticated is always going to be false.
I see, but if you do forget that string, though, isAuthenticated is going to be false,
but you're still going to have claims.
You're still going to see hello world.
Yes.
Okay, that's which fine. Is what you do not want.
Yeah, so here we go. I'm just going to see if I have any authenticated identities. If I don't, I'm going to go see hello world. Otherwise, what I'm going to do, and this is deliberately complicated, it's not what you really do in the real world, is I'm going to look for the first authenticated identity. Then I'm going to look and see the first authenticated identity that has a name claim. And then I'm going to pull out the value. And we'll put that back up here, because otherwise Razor gets a little bit confused. Because it really needs to be one command. But you know, it doesn't wrap nicely on screen.
So let me see if I understand. So what we're doing right now is we're looking to see, are any of the identities authenticated?
Yep.
And if that's not the case, that means that none of them are, then we say hello world. Correct. Otherwise, we're just going to put the first name identity out there.
Yeah, we're going to look for any identity that is authenticated and has a name claim, and then we're going to dump the value of that name claim out. So if I hit play, then hopefully this works.
And what's interesting is that in the background, we're having this fun dance where we're...
Look, yeah, there you go. Fun dance.
Where we go to the index, it redirects to unauthorized.
Correct.
It sets the thing up, redirects back to again. Index, then looks at the claims, then pushes the first one out.
When you do, so what we're doing behind the scenes in unauthorized is we are dropping an identity cookie. And then when we do the redirect, that cookie comes back in. Cookie middleware kicks in and goes, hey, that's one of mine. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an identity out of it. And then lo and behold, we are authenticated.
Mm-hmm.
And we are authenticated. And then at that point, our authorization policy kicks in, which says you must always be authenticated. And lo and behold, it works.
Got it. Cool.
Okay. So the labs for this have a workshop. And the workshop shows you the easier way to do it, which is you just go to user.identity. Because if you only have one, that will work. And then you get a user.identity and pull the name claim out of that. But this illustrates that it is possible for you to have more than one identity on a principal. But if you're writing those sorts of apps, you're probably already going to be aware of all the tricks for this.
So if you do user.identity singular and there's multiple, does it just pull the first one?
It pulls the first authenticated one out. Because when we construct the user principal, we change things. So that's always going to be the first one.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. So far, so good.
We're good with that. So we have now got very basic authentication and authorization, which basically says you must be authenticated.
Right.
Nice and simple. So that's our first step. So let's see if I can remember where we go next. So we've got authorize all the things. Right. So the next step from here is to actually start examining properties of the user to decide whether we want to make authorization decisions.
Okay.
So the way we used to do this was, well, the old authorize attribute had a username property on it. And people would hard code usernames into their code. That's generally a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not great. So we have removed that. The other option you had was you could give us a list of roles, and it would
allow people in that were members of those roles. Now, we've kept that mostly for backwards compatibility and for people that are writing intranet apps and using Windows authentication.
Got it.
Because all Windows authentication does is it basically takes all the groups you are a member of and maps those into roles. And when you call is in role, you know, like Redmond all users, mm-hmm. it looks for the group membership and returns true or false based okay. upon that. So it is there mostly for integrated authentication. It just, and which doesn't work in the cloud. Mm-hmm. What you have to do is you change your infrastructure and you use an ADFS server, and then you bind your application to the ADFS server and it does all the OAuth dance, or you bind it up to Windows Azure Active Directory and it does an OAuth dance, and eventually it comes back down again and we actually get a proper claims identity out of it. That would be your migration path when you want to move from having an intranet app to an extranet app and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that you will have lots and lots of videos from Vittorio on that.
Yeah, I'm working with him
yes.
to get that going.
Yeah, okay, cool. So what we're going to do is we are going to create a role. So first of all, we will go back to our account controller, and this is where we sort of set everything up. So I'm going to cut and paste code again because I no longer trust myself to type things nice. Correctly. And I am going to change my attribute on the, well, we don't have an attribute in the home controller, so I'm going to add one. So it's cumulative. So the first rule, we have our global rule that basically says that everyone must be authorized.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the home controller, I'm now going to say that you must be an administrator role. So what do you think will happen when I run this?
403.
Which maps to?
Forbidden.
Forbidden.
Yes.
So let us see if I haven't made any mistakes anywhere else.
That was quite an easy call. Oh!
There we go. All righty. So we have an identity, but it's not authorized to do what we want it to do.
I see.
So we bounced to forbidden. We didn't used to do this. We just bounced back to the login page. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this now makes a bunch of people very, very happy that we can finally tell the difference.
Was that wasn't something that was in before?
No. This is brand new.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Because the mechanism for this is quite different, because you might have a user that is authenticated, that is a member of your particular organization, and you need to tell them these kinds of tasks are only appropriate for these kinds of roles.
Yes. You know, if you try to access the HR database, you would get bounced to a forbidden page that would say, stay where you are, security is coming to your desk.
Nice.
To give a perhaps more sensible example, and going back to this idea of multiple identities, when I log into my bank, I can see my bank balance, but if I want to transfer, I have to type my password in again. So you can imagine things where you can just log in with a username and password, and you can do simple stuff. But if you wanted to do administrative functions, you would then pop up another screen asking for, say, a one-time password or a token from an authenticator app or that sort of thing. And then you create two identities, which would say that they've gone from being a normal user to an admin user, and they've gone through two-factor auth to get up to admin.
That's actually quite clever, because this supposes a situation where a single user is potentially forbidden until they do something else.
Yes.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But normally it's you've been a bad person, you can't do it, log out and log in with another account.
Right.
So what we now need to do is we need to add the roles. So let's just close everything down. And we're going to copy and paste. We go back to our account controller. And here we have where we are setting our claims up. So let's make this perfectly clear. I'm going to add a role claim. Claim types.role. There are a bunch of standard claims that came from WS Federation and mm-hmm. WS Star and SAML and a bunch of other really big, fat, heavy things that you used back in the WCF days.
And those are just, a claim is a string.
It's a string.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it may have a different value type, and it actually also has an issuer, and we'll come on to that eventually about why that's important. So I am adding a role, and I'm adding the administrator role. And if I hit run,
we should again see the index hello world.
Well, or hello Barry.
That's right.
Because I am now properly
that's right.
authenticated and authorized. Perfect. So cutting and pasting works. Me manually typing things does not.
Yeah, that's my problem as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we have roles. And that's nice and simple. So what we're going to do is we're basically going to move away from
our old style specifying roles in an attribute, because that's really hard to maintain.
Well, it might be, there might be a situation too where it's not just the role you're in, but it might be like your age, or it might have to do with...
You're jumping ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you read ahead this morning over your morning coffee?
I don't know.
Okay, so we're gonna come on to that eventually, and now you've spoiled my surprise.
Oh, sorry.
Is that your sad face?
Yeah, it's kind of scary sad face. Sorry about that.
It's a scary sad face. Okay. So I'm going to swap over and we're going to move towards policies. We never really liked the idea of hard coding requirements in an authorized attribute.
Yeah, I always feel weird doing that. Like there's certain funny strings that feels like after I write funny strings, I need to take a shower or something.
Okay, so I'm not even going to react to you to that. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to startup.cs. And here we have all our bits and pieces. And I'm going to replace add authorization with something that sets up a policy. Didn't mean to close it, but we'll hide it. Here we go. So in authorization, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up an authorization policy. And this one is called administrator only. And all the policy is going to do is it's going to require the administrator role.
Okay.
So rather than have things stuck in a static declarative attribute, the requirements to fulfill a policy are now done in code.
Okay.
So you could change these depending on the time of day.
Sure.
For example, when your application starts. So we're saying when application starts, and then I'm going to go back to my index. Control or my home controller, and instead of roles, it's going to specify a policy. So I'm still using my authorize attribute,
I see.
But this time we're using the policy property, and I'm going to specify the name of the policy.
And that's interesting, right? Because the policies could actually be engineered by someone completely different, and
they just
say, hey. For this type of action, they need to have this policy.
Correct. So policies are made up of requirements, one or more of them. So,
sure.
And for each policy, you must fulfill all of the requirements.
Okay.
So in our example here, we have a really simple policy, and it has a single requirement, which is require role administrator. So if I run this...
It's effectively functionally the same thing.
Functionally the same thing. But now we could change the way the policy works when we set it up.
Which is really nice because now the whole authorization can be its own sort of code.
It can. You could ship a bunch of policies, requirements, and handlers for those requirements as a NuGet package. And they're unit testable.
Which is even better, right?
Which never happened before.
Right.
So that's nice and simple. We are replacing our role. But like I say, roles are there for...
Backwards compatibility
with backwards integrated auth.
Sure.
Which I can't remove because, you know, people still use it. So in this time, I am going to change. I'm going to add a second policy. And this policy basically says that I'm going to look for a claim called employee ID. Oh, look at that. I can't even cut and paste.
Yeah,
right.
Dude, seriously. It must be Friday.
Yeah. It was that shot of tequila you gave me before I started.
Yeah, it was to make things more interesting, at least.
Yes. So I'm going to add a new policy. Policy's called employee ID. And it's going to require a claim where the claim name is employee ID. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see where we're going with this.
Yeah.
So I am going to go back to our little fake login piece in the account controller. And I am going to add a new claim of employee ID. So I'm not going to put any value in it just yet.
Can we go back to where we were before in that? I think it was... So this policy is currently not being enforced anywhere.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
So we still have to add the authorize attribute. So it was employee ID. If I go over here, I can start layering them if I want.
Oh, so you can do more than one policy.
Well, you can do more than one authorized attribute. That's always been the case. And you must pass
every single one here. So you must have an employee ID, and you must be an administrator at this point in time.
So if we wouldn't have added that extra claim, then we would have got the forbidden.
You would have passed administrator only, but you wouldn't have passed employee ID. So if I run this, hopefully, because I'm now saying hopefully because, you know, I can't even cut and paste correctly.
Yeah, there's some cut and paste issues. We're going to be able to see hello, Barry.
Correct. Because we've fulfilled both of the policies.
Got it.
Nice and simple. But look, claims are both got a claim name and a claim value.
Uh-huh.
This one's not, this policy is not very good.
Well, no, it's just saying, is there something there?
Yeah, so really, more realistically, you want to search for certain employee IDs. Now, the demonstration that I'm going to do is not how you would do things in real life, because we're going to hard code the employee IDs that we are going to check for, which is roughly equivalent of hard coding usernames, which is what we're trying to move away from.
But it's for illustrative purposes.
Yes, it's for demonstration purposes to make it simple so Seth can understand.
And I'm getting it a little bit.
Okay, so I am going to change the policy. And this time, we're going to require the employee ID, but the value must be either 123 or 456. So if I run this now...
Is that like a params?
Yes. Okay. This is basically an array of values that will be acceptable.
Okay.
If I run this now, what will happen?
Forbidden,
correct. You just like saying that in a deep forbidding voice.
Forbidden. So. Yeah. So as it's going through, it's going to do the administrator check, and it's going to say, these IDs are not any of them in there, so you're forbidden.
You're forbidden, correct. Was that just, that was your telenovela voice?
Yeah, that was, I'm going to switch to Spanish any second.
That goes along with the tequila, and it's just going to confuse the heck out of me.
So now all we need to go back.
You have to remember, I'm British, so the way we deal with foreign languages is we speak slower and louder, because everyone should understand English.
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Instead of having an empty claim, we are going to put 123, which is one of the values that was valid. I run it again. And hopefully this time we will get hello Barry.
So as we're
hola, if you're gonna that's hola. The maximum of my Spanish.
Hola.
Hola, really?
So I'm here. I'm looking at the policies that you're setting up, and the only things I saw were require role and require a claim. I'm assuming there's more goodness in there.
Yes. Okay. So these are the simple ways to do it. It's where you want to knock something up quick and dirty. But the fun part comes next. The fun part comes in the fact that we can code our own requirements, and then we can code the way to fulfill those requirements. So if I had a requirement of Taco Tuesday.
Which is an essential requirement.
Yes. What we want to check is, it's Tuesday. You can't check that by looking at someone's roles or someone's claims. It's actually just the date.
Which has nothing to do with anything.
Nothing, I know, but it's a very silly example. But if we have tequila and Taco Tuesday, now I must check something for the user, which is their date of birth, and check that they're over 21.
Oh, I see.
And that is not a claim either. Normally, the claims that you will get back is someone's date of birth. And we need a way to take a claim and look at it, and then run some arbitrary code to decide whether we are going to match that requirement or not.
So I didn't see any require. Is there like a class you inherit from? What's going on?
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
I think
okay.
that is our next segment.
Got it. Okay.
So we've covered all the simple stuff, and now we're going to get on to the more complicated stuff.
All right, so what we'll do is we're gonna cut here so
have
that
more
we
tequila.
Yeah, have a little bit more water. And so what we've been able to see is we saw the difference between authentication, authorization. We saw the difference between forbidden and authorized.
Yep.
And then what we did is we did some little magic trickery just to make sure we were authenticated, and then we started looking at simple policies for regulating authorization.
And I should point out that this is all documented as well. I know we've been quite lax in our documentation for core, but this has now been documented for a few months because it's all new, so I thought it was only fair.
Fantastic.
Even though I hate writing documentation.
Yeah, I know. No one likes it. It's called yak shaving. It's the important, essential stuff that we need to do to get the important, essential stuff done.
Yep.
Well, Barry, thanks for spending some time with us. Please stay tuned. We're going to be talking about more on policies in a later video. Thanks for watching. My name is Seth Warr. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.